Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp.
Today we're going to be learning the halachas of the Seder night of Pesach. This is Siman Kuf Yud Tes, that is 119 in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. We're going to look at six basic concepts, and again, we're not doing a thorough investigation. The point of the Kitzur is an overall perspective of the basic halachas, the basic what's of understanding this. We're going to look at six concepts, that is starting the Seder in the four cups of wine, Urchatz Karpas Yachatz, then Magid, Ratza Motzi Matza Marar Korech, and then Shulchan Aruch Tzofen Borech, and finally, Halel Er Nirza. Let's jump straight in, starting the Seder in the four cups of wine. When can we start the Seder? So the Seder, usually, when it comes to a Yom Tov, one can bring in Yom Tov a little bit of early. However, the Leil, they say Kiddush early even, but when it comes to the Leil HaSeder, one has to start the Seder at, say, Sakochavim, at the time when stars are out, so it has to be later. Why is this different? The reason is because the Torah specifically says that the matzah needs to be at night. It says, when referring to Pesach, we're referring to Korban Pesach, v'achlu es abasar balayla, zed needs to be eaten on this night, and therefore it's at night, and therefore one cannot have it during the day. Therefore, Kiddush is also associated with the four cups, which also need to be at night as well. How do we engage the kids? So the kids talks about giving out like treats, like today would be candies, and also when they answer questions. There's also strange actions that we're doing throughout the Seder which trigger their questions and engagement. And today it requires a little more work. This is not the Seder Shir right now. That we do other opportunities. But it's important to include them and have them as collaborators. Have you looked at their Haggadahs beforehand? Have you asked them questions before? And what are their interests? Are they visual learners? Are they involved in activities? There's a lot of things one can do, but it is really important that they are part of the process of the Seder, both planning and experiencing it as well. How many cups of wine are there? So it happens to be that the predominant view in the Mishnah is that there are four cups of wine. That's what we always know. However, it is worthwhile knowing that the Rambam and the Rif have a different perspective, that there's a fifth cup of wine based on the teachings of a specific text in the Gemara in Psachim Kuf Yud Chesamun Aleph, in which there's a fifth cup as wine as well. And in deference to that perspective of the Rambam and the Rif against Rashi and Tosfos, we have a fifth cup of wine. We call that Koshel Aliyah, and the Vilna Gaon explains that the fifth cup is because of Teiku, that Tishbi Yitaretz Kushua Sabayas. We don't know if it's four or five cups, so we have the fifth cup as well. Who pours the cup? So an attendant should pour them because it's a derech cheres, the way of freedom, so it shouldn't be that one person's pouring for themselves. So generally speaking, if there's no attendant, people pour for each other. It's always worthwhile trying to be that person to pour for other people. A lot of people just sit there and wait. Be the kind of person who's not just sitting and waiting and is sharing as well with others. How much needs to be drunk? So a person needs to drink a roiv kos, meaning say a majority of the cup. A cup obviously has to contain revias, which is between 86 and 150 milliliters of wine, and for the all of the fourth cup. The Kitzur does bring an opinion that it is best to drink all of each cup. And therefore, if a person wants to try to do that, obviously one should have a cup which is not massive because it makes it much more manageable. How are the cups drunk? The cups are drunk, all four of them, in a position of cheros, of leaning as well. What if a person cannot drink wine? So one needs to try hard, even if regularly one doesn't. One needs to, even if one feels adverse effects as well. If it's absolutely not possible, there are other options. One can drink grape juice, even light grape juice. One can dilute the wine. And without any other options, the Kitzur does bring the notion of chamar medina, which is some sort of mead or alcoholic beverage, which is the accepted beverage of that country as well. It's worthwhile just going through quickly the different shiurim. So the smallest shiur or revius or Rav Chaim Noah is 3 fluid ounces. Rav Moshe Feinstein is 3.3 fluid ounces, and the Chazon Ish is 5.07 fluid ounces. In America, people should follow Rav Moshe, and that's 3.3 fluid ounces should be the way to go. So the first three cups, one should drink more than 51% of the cup. For the fourth, the whole cup as well. That's what we just said as well. If one cannot do that shiur, one needs to do at least a meloy lugma, which means a cheek full of the liquid, which is a little smaller than that as well. And a person should really try to push themselves to be able to have this as well. If it'll put a person into bed because they'll be sick, one does not need to do so as well. And it is worthwhile knowing that if it's not at all possible, it's best to hear someone else say the brachas and be yotze and take a small taste. Including chamar medina, orange juice, tea, and coffee if a person's not able to be able to do this as well. When it comes to dilution of the cups, it can be diluted. However, The Starkey points out that the mixture should contain at least 4% alcohol for it to be diluted, and a wine which has 12% alcohol content can be diluted 1/3 wine, 2/3 grape juice or water. Alternatively, it can be diluted 1/3 wine, 1/3 grape juice, and 1/3 water. If a person cannot drink wine, they can use obviously grape juice as well. So these are just some of the basics in terms of the four cups. Let's jump straight into the next topic. Urchatz Karpas Yachatz. What's next after Kadesh, or doing Kiddush on the night of Pesach, which incorporates Avdalah if it's a Motzei Shabbos, in the order of Yak Nahaz, which is an acronym of those stages. So the next is washing one's hands. This is washing one's hands of Urchatz. There is no bracha. Why is there no bracha? The reason is because, generally speaking, in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, when there was Tumah and Tahara, people would be very careful that even before eating Davar Shetibula B'mashke, a vegetable even, that one would dip in water. As a dip, one would have to wash it because of Tumah and Tahara, because water is a conduit of Tumah. It's one of the seven liquids which actually is a conduit for impurity, and therefore, as a function of that, one would wash hands before. And we don't do that today. However, on the night of Pesach, we're extra careful to do it, but it would be done without a bracha because it's not the common practice throughout the rest of the year. What is next? The next is karpas, where we take the specific vegetable and we dip it into salt water. What's the bracha? We say borei pri adamai, and we have kavana, we have intention, that this is done for the maror as well. So one doesn't need to say a borei pri adamai later on the maror. Does one lean? The answer is yes for this section. What is next? Next, we take yachatz, we break the middle matzah, and we put aside the biggest piece and wrap it away, and this is the afikom. And why do we do this? So the Kitzur explains this is like the korban pesach, and some of the practice to even place that wrapped matzah on one's back and walk around the table as like the nation of Israel leaving Egypt in such a manner as well. Some of this, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov explains that the reason why we do this is we also wrap up a little piece of our character, which is the child inside of us, which we pull out later on. And somehow we need to remind ourselves of that innocence, that beauty, or that perspective of that young child later on as well. What's next? We next uncover the matzahs and lift them up to say ha lach ma'anya, to welcome in guests. What's the purpose of this? Clearly, at this point in time, no guests are just walking in. One explanation which is given by Jonathan Sachs explains is because this is a sharing of the bread of affliction. If you're a slave, if you're a prisoner, you do everything you can to look after your bread. The fact that you're sharing even your bread of affliction is an indication of the fact that you are free, and that's what's being expressed here as well. Let's jump straight into the next concept. That's magid. So the next thing we do is we pour the second cup of wine, and then the children ask. They ask the manishtana. What if there are no children? This needs to be asked. So even if there's only adults, one adult should ask the other adults the manishtana. If one's by oneself, one would ask oneself. Why does it need to be this way? So it needs to be in the form of question-answer format. Questions have a way of triggering the importance and relevance of that information. Without questions, people don't really care about the information that is in front of them. What is next? So we next have Avarimayinu, which is Magid. What is the breakdown of Magid? So it's very simple. Rav Rimon has an introduction to his Haggadah that there's three stages to the section of Magid. Number one is Matchilim is Gnus Masayim B'Shevach. We start with the difficult times and end with the praiseworthy times. The next section is Aramid Ovid Ovi, where we take four Pesukim, which are a four Pasuk summary in Parashas Kisava in the Bikurim section of the four stages of the exile of Mitzrayim. One is immigration, which is being foreigners. Number two is servitude. Number three is calling out to Hashem. And the fourth is being saved with miracles. And the third part of the Haggadah is Ramon Gamliel. Rav Rimon points out that they all follow the same format, which is they start off with praise, then have the main chunk of the information. It starts off with a question, has the main chunk of the information in the middle, and then it has praise at the end of each section. The first one of a section has two parts, A and B, because it's Manishtana, which is the questions, then Avarim Ayinu, which is the physical servitude, then and Shevach Baruch HaMakom, and there's the four questions of the four sons, which is the beginning of 3B, in which we have four questions again. This time we talk about the spiritual servitude, which means Tchila Avdei Avodah Zarah Yodeh V'Aseinu. We end with Shevach V'Yishu Amda. We have now done the same thing, right? So we have four questions, two stories, one about physical, one about spiritual servitude, and then ending with Shevach. Then we have Arami Aved Avi, which starts with the question, Ma Bikesh Lavan Arami, what did Lavan do? And then didactically, we explain those four psukim and expound them to the end of the Makos, end with praise, which is Dayenu. And then we have again, Pesach Hashuma, Matzah Hashuma, Maror Hashuma. We ask about these three concepts of the Seder, and we end with the Shevach, which is the Halel as well. That's the entire Magid. And the point of this is there's three different types of learners. There's children who learn through stories, there's children who learn through didactic ideas of looking into the text, and there's those who learn visually from the visual props. And each of those those different parts are the three parts of the maggid. It makes it a lot easier to swallow it when one understands the concepts, what's going on. Now, how should it be done? It should be done in a language one understands. So if one doesn't understand Hebrew, one should also make sure to translate in a language one understands. Why do we cover the matzahs at Vehisha Amda? The reason is because we lift our cups at that point in time, and so in deference to the matzah, we cover it. Are there any other physical demonstrations? The answer is yes. At Rabban Gamliel, when we say matzah zu shanu oichlem, maror zu shanu oichlem, we point to it and we lift it up to indicate that this is what it is. Why do we not say this by Pesach? Why do we not point to the shank bone? And the reason is because we don't have the Korban Pesach. This is just a representation. We don't want people to get confused and think this really is the Korban Pesach. When else is the cup lifted? So it's lifted from the last section of Maggid, which is Lefichach, at the praise, the very end after Rabban Gamliel, to the end of the Halel and the Bracha, it remains lifted for that as well. Move to our fourth concept, which is Rachta, Motzi Matzah, Maror, and Korech. What do we do next? So we wash and we wash our Bracha, and that's called Rachta. What's next? We do Motzi Matzah, where we do two Brachas. We need Lechem Mishnah, two sets of full bread for Yom Tov, so that's the top and the bottom Matzah. And we also need a Prusa, a broken piece of Matzah for the Mitzvah of Matzah, because the way that we were in Egypt was broken. We never had anything full. So what we do is like this. The first Bracha is said with all three of the Matzahs, the top one and bottom one, which are full. That's the with the middle one in between. Then we lower and drop the bottom matzah, and we only have the top one and the broken middle one. And then we say the bracha on the mitzvah of matzah. At that point in time, the top and the middle matzah are broken into pieces and sent around for everybody to partake. And a person should have a kazayas. Obviously, it might not be enough, so they have other supplementary pieces, so each person has two kazayas and one of each of those. Do we need salt? Not on the night of Pesach. How they eaten? So the matzah is eaten leaning. What if one cannot eat matzah just like that? So one can soak it in water as long as it's not soaked for more than 24 hours, because then it becomes like it's cooked, and it also needs to have the tzuras hapas. It should look like bread. It shouldn't just look like mush. What if somebody is very sick and even that cannot work? So they can soak it in wine. What is next? Then we do maror. It's dipped in the charoses, and there's no leaning for the maror as well. There's no bracha on the maror for a vegetable, because that was said by the karpas. There's a bracha on the mitzvah of the maror azar. What's next? We have a stage in the Seder called koirech, where we take the bottom matzah, take a piece of that, and ensure we have a sandwich which is dipped in charoses and the matzah, and it is done leaning. What do we say? So we say this paragraph, zechel mikdash kihilel, this is how it was done. What if one is sick and cannot eat maror at all? So the kisser suggests having a bitter herb, sucking a bitter herb to taste the bitterness, even if one cannot have the full maror, and one would not say a brach in such a situation. Just to go through the shiurim, the amount that's necessary. So for matzah, the Reb Chaim Noe's measurement for the matzah for kazayas, which is necessary, is 29 cubic centimeters, which is 9.5 grams, or Moshe Feinstein has 43 cubic centimeters, or this is like 1.5 ounces, and the Chazon Ish has it at 50 cubic centimeters, or 16.5 grams. So the Pesach Shavuos points out that a person who is sick can finish the matzah in 9 minutes, not the regular 3 minutes, which is the Zman Achilas Pras, the amount of time necessary to finish it, so one can do it slowly and it's still all right. For the first kazayas, one can be mekil if one is sick to have only 9.5 grams, and one can also break it up and soak it as we discussed as well. And if eating it like even like this is dangerous or incapacitate a person by doing so, they're exempt from matzah and they may taste it, but then not make a bracha. For the maror, the shirim are for the regular shir is for Reb Chaim Noe has 19.3 cubic centimeters or 0.7 fluid ounces. For Reb Moshe Feinstein, it's 32 cubic centimeters or 1.1 fluid ounces. And Reb Chazon Ish, it's 33.3 cubic centimeters or 1.1 fluid ounces. So these are the different shirim that are necessary in this case. The Mishnah Berurah says that a person who is sick when it comes to maror can take whichever matzah is easier for them, and they can eat the kazayas slowly as well. And we, again, the Pesach Shavuos points out that they have 9 minutes to complete this in this situation. They should use the minute, if they're able to, they should use at least 17 cubic centimeters, which is the lowest. And if that's even a problem, then they can go down to 9 as well. So these are some of the measurements just to be aware of in terms of trying to plan this for people who are sick. We move on to our fifth concept, that's Shulchan Oreich, Tzafun and Borech. So what does one lean during the Suda? The answer is some of the practice to lean even during the Suda as an expression of Chayrus, of freedom. What should one eat? So some of the practice to have eggs during the meal as well. But one should be careful not to eat too much, because one doesn't want to be completely full by the time one gets to the Afikomen. Are there things which should not be on the menu? The answer is yes. One should not have roasted meat or even roasted chicken because it would make us seem like we have the Korban Pesach, and we do not have the Korban Pesach today. What if it was cooked and then roasted? So let's say I have meat. I cook the meat and then I roast it. That's a problem still. One should avoid that in the Nata Pesach. It should all be cooked meat if we're having, in that case. What about dips? One should avoid having dips during the Pesach night meal because one wants to emphasize the fact that there was only Shnei Pa'amim, which was two times, one for Karpas and one for Maror. What is the end of the meal? The dessert is Afikoma, and that's the last thing one's supposed to have, and one cannot eat after that for the rest of the night. How much must one have? So the Kisser quotes an opinion that one should have two kazesim, two olive volumes, but minimally one should have one as well. What happens if the afikoman is lost, not retrieved, kids are asleep, and they don't know where, we don't know where it is? One can eat regular matzah to achieve this as well. What's next? We do barech, which is where we bless, we do the benching, and we fill up the cup for the third cup as well. What if we forgot to eat the afikoman, and we already started the zimun, rabbi sign of orech, one stops, washes without a bracha, eats the afikoman and then benches with a new zimun. What if we remember only after we benched? So if it's before the third cup has been drunk, we wash again with a bracha, say amoitzi, eat the afikoman, bench, and then say the bracha on the third cup. If the third cup was already drunk when people realize that they do not have the afikoman, if one does not usually say benching on a cup, then one would wash amoitzi, eat the afikoman, bench, and have no cup on the benching. But if one usually always benches, in, let's say in a minyan or with three people with a zimun with a cup of wine, then one would not go back. One would rely on the earlier matzah one ate as being afikoman because one does not want to bench and have to have a cup, and then is adding a fifth cup that's going to be drunk. How far should one go for a zimun? So one should try to ensure there's a zimun at the meal. However, one does not go to one's neighbors to ask for it because people need to bench where they eat. Who does the zimun? It should be the Baal HaBayis. Tov Ayinu Hu Yevareich. The person is good of either person is facilitating should be the one to do it as well. How does the benching end? So there's a bracha of Bret Pri HaGefen on the third cup, and then everybody drinks it while leaning. Can one drink afterwards? So there's no drinking between the third and the fourth cup. We now move on to Hallel. Hallel is said afterwards. So first we fill up the fourth cup after the third cup. We open the door. We say the Psukim of Shvoch Hamasra. Why do we do this? This is a Leil Shimurim. It's a night where we are protected, and we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice upon those who mistreated the nation of Israel. What is next? So the Hallel continues. We start from Leilana, which is where we left off the Hallel as we finished Magid. How is Hoidu done in the Hallel? So if there are three people, men, women, children, then one person leads, the other people respond. So the first person says, Hoidu Lashem Kitov, the other people respond, Hoidu Lashem Kitov, Yomana Yisrael, everybody responds to the refrain, Hoidu Lashem Kitov. It does not need a minion, even three people is sufficient. When Hallel is finished, what then? So we drink the fourth cup. One should drink a revius, or certainly all of it if one's able to, and then one says a bracha achrona, the last blessing on the wine. Can we drink after this? The answer is no, only water afterwards. What's next? We do Nirtza, which is we conclude the night with lots of praises and songs to Hashem. There's lots of praises which are included in that section. What about after that? So some of the men like to read Shir HaShirim and to learn until one falls asleep. Does one say Kriya Shema Lamita? So one would say Hamapil and the Kriya Shema Lamita, but one does not need to do the Tehillim that one usually does, which is Shiras Pagoim, which is a protection because it's a night of Shimurim. So a lot of very fascinating halachas. This is a basic bare-bones structure of looking at the Seder. With this, we conclude. Have a wonderful and meaningful